9th, 1998. This is Ruth Hendrickson interviewing Geraldine Haig for the Crawford County Public Library. Okay. Well, why don't you start off by telling me where you were born? That's the beginning.
I was born in Philadelphia, and because my parents were living there at the time. And we didn't stay in Philadelphia long. They said they moved back here on Gravel Hill right after I was born. So Gravel Hill's all I've known.
Had they originally been from Gravel Hill?
No, they lived in Haverty Grace at the time. That's where my grandparents lived, in Haverty Grace at the time. But then when they came back to the old home place that my grandparents had down the road. And that's where we lived, that's where we were raised.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we were talking about yesterday to the students when they came, that we carried water from over there in the gravel pit. And Sister Irvin, all of them was telling them about how we all had to carry water from springs down there. And that's where we got our water from.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would walk down through there and go all the way over to Chapel Road to pick strawberries and things like that. But that's where I was raised.
Where'd you go to school?
Right here at the on side of the church to a one-room schoolhouse. I went there to the 7th grade. And then, you know, at that time you graduated, and you wore your little white dress, and we all went down to Swamp Creek, down to Union Methodist, to graduate.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, years after that, they went to St. James. But we went to St. James to graduate from high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then I attended the high school, the colored high school in Haverty Bridge. That's
mm-hmm.
where I finished.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how did you meet your husband?
Oh, I met my husband at Prairie Point. Well, I lived at my cousin's on 4th Street. She lived on Prairie Point, and I lived there. But I had met him at a place, you know, Rocky Springs, when we used to go to Rocky Springs. I had met him there and through my sister, but I just wasn't interested in nobody. And so, of course, then when I went to Prairie Point, I went to Prairie Point in 46, and I graduated in 42, and I went to Prairie Point in 46, and I lived with her, and he used to come up there because she was like his adopted son to my cousin. And so he started talking to me, but I really wasn't interested, you know. And my cousin would say, "Now, Gerald, why do you, I heard the door slam, and Herman went out last night. Why don't you pay her, talk to Herman?" I said, "Because I have to get my sleep." And I said, "I can't go to sleep on him." And he'd get angry and walk out. And so she finally talked to me. She said, "He's a nice boy," said, "you should treat him right." And then we started, you know, dating, and he had another girlfriend, so of course she stopped talking to me, and I just would tell him, I said, "Well, I guess I was the best, so I want to," but then we got married in the end of 46.
And he found out he was a nice guy.
Yeah, he found out he was a nice guy, so we got married then, and our first child was born in 49.
What was it like working at Prairie Point? Was it segregated?
Yeah, oh yes, much segregated at that time. I worked with on the women's ward the whole all time. So of course I didn't see the segregation that he saw. He was on the ward where they were just all the black men, and I was on the ward where they was mixed. So then after that it was, you know, integrated after that.
Mm-hmm.
But the women were always together.
Uh-huh. It's hard now, when you come to Harbor County later, to think about what this was like as a segregated community, but everything was.
Everything was. And it has improved some. It has improved some. It hasn't really got there. There are a lot of places that really you don't feel comfortable even going, that you can go in.
That's true.
Don't feel comfortable. But it is better, because I can remember when we had to go upstairs downtown to the movies and all those things, and the signs were saying colors and whatnot. So I remember all of that.
Yeah. It's hard for people that didn't see that to understand
what it was. That's
yeah,
right.
Really.
And our young folk nowadays really don't want to hear it, because they have so much. They have so much. And I told them, I said, that, you know, we didn't have all the toys. We didn't have all the things that you all had. We had to take them sticker birds. Whenever I come in the end of the road and I see all them sticker birds out there, I just marvel at them, because that was our play toys. We would take those sticker birds and make all different kind of angels and houses and stuff with it, pile of sand and rolling tires and things like that. Those were our play toys, you know.
Yeah.
And I said, and they just have so much now. They don't want to hear what we.
Yeah, yeah, the boots are a message, aren't they?
That's true. That's true. And they keep saying, "Oh, you look so well." I said, "It's hard work and hard living." I said, "You all have it so easy that you just don't take care of yourself."
Yeah. Well, tell me about the Gravel Hill community, because I think that's important for people to know.
But the Gravel Hill community, it was like, truly, when I grew up, it was really all black. It was just all the houses were black folks. And then eventually the white people started coming in. And we had to walk. We didn't have any buses. We had to either walk to school. Well, we walked up here to the school. Then when we went to Havity Grace, when we was transferred to Havity Grace, I remember my sister saying, come on, Gerald. If the fella didn't pick us up, she would drag me. We'd walk all the way to Havity Grace. When I would get to school, I would be so cold until I'd sit there and cry for about a half an hour before I could get anything done. And, of course, I have 4 frostbitten fingers, but it wasn't from going to school. It was from walking to work. When I went to work, I got 4. And right now, when it gets real cold, they just get numb, and I can always tell when it's cool. My fingers get numb. But we used to have to walk to school, and then there was a fellow that worked downtown, and we could catch him. We came back, and then my sister and I, we stayed at one of our cousins for a while on Stoke Street. So we graduated, and then both of us, we worked like all weekend. She would, a lady from Darlington would pick her up and take her up to Darlington and work on weekends. And then when she graduated, I took that same job, and they picked me up, and I went there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then that's where, when my grandfather died, that's where I was working, and I'll never forget, I walked all the way from Darlington to him. He lived right back there.
Oh, my. Mm-hmm. Is your grandparents' house still standing?
No, they just tore it down, I guess about 4 years ago. They built another house there. Mm-hmm. Back there.
Are most of the houses here new from when you were a child?
Yes, most of them were new. The only, and I went around taking pictures of, Miss Stella Jones was right at the end. I got a picture of that one before they tore it down. And then I got a picture of our old house before they tore it down. And it's not really but one old house standing, and that's down there behind them bushes. Uh-huh. Miss Pat Morgan's house is standing back there. Of course, now Miss Turner's house is all the way back up in that lane. Uh-huh. That someone bought. And those are about the only old houses that are still around that when I was born.
Yeah. Now, is the church in the same place as the old church
was? The church is in the same place. It's just that, we had to reface. It had to reface and rebuild on. Mm-hmm. The church is in the same place, and of course the hall, when they knocked that one-room schoolhouse down, that's where the hall was.
And when you were growing up as a child, were you aware of the fact that there were the really old gravestones back there, the Civil War ones?
No.
You didn't find that out until later?
So later. Mm-hmm. No, I wasn't aware of that. And I knew the graveyard was there, but being young, we never paid any attention to that one back behind the school.
Yeah. When did they finally find that? When they started the fight with the Gravel Hill?
Well, it was always been back there, but when they started the fight with the Gravel Hill, but I had walked back there before the fight with the Gravel Hill, because that's when I saw that pretty bronze one that was back there, and it's no longer there. And I told him, I said, the tombstone is gone. I know it was back there. And so it was during that time that we found out that, so many of them were there, but I knew that the graves were back there because the Prestons are back there, and we used to, and the Hawkinses, and they kept it, kind of off, cleaned off, and the school was there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so we, and then they would just put them stones. I remember how they would stick them stones, at the end of the graves. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And they would stick a higher one for the head and a lower one for the foot. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, it's always been, very quiet. And then I can remember when they very first started. Now, my brother remembers when they brought the soldiers paraded up here and they camped out over the church grove and all that, but I don't remember that. I just can't remember that, but he says that they did, and I remember when we used to have camp meetings and all over the church grove, but But then they started digging that gravel. I can remember them trucks up and down this road, and the dust was flying all the time.
I'm sure.
Yes.
I'm sure.
And they used to call, we used to call the man that sold them the gravel, we used to call him Gravel King. Mr. Walter was, he just sold that gravel. He didn't, and he was really the most wealthy person on Gravel Hill at that time.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Do you remember how it got the name, or who named the Gravel Hill?
No, I don't. Because it was called,
always knew it, that
it was
way?
Called it was called Gravelly Hill when I, you know, when I was coming up, and then all of a sudden they took the LY off and made Gravel Hill. I don't
uh-huh.
know why.
Uh-huh.
But it's always been called Gravelly Hill, mm-hmm. as far as I know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, tell me about the church over here. I mean, that's obviously the most important part of this community.
Well, yes, yes, and we have always had, you know, a few members. Never has been a big congregation, and I can remember we had, you know, different, we've always, it was like on a circuit, we've always with another church or three other churches, and our minister always, we always had like afternoon service, so it was just after the minister came before Reverend Tan that we, we had, you know, wood stoves and coal stoves and things like that. And my husband would go over, and he would, when after Mr. Lloyd Presbury died, he used to come up and do the stoves like on Saturday night and bank them and whatnot. But then after he passed, my husband took over, you know, taking care of the stoves and things like that, and have the church warm, and we'd go to church. And we didn't have nothing else to do, so we stayed in church all day and didn't mind it. Mm-hmm. It was like, you know, we giggled and laughed at people, you know, the way they dressed or the way they sang or whatever they done. But it was just like a joy, you know, because we had nothing else to do.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ministers would pile us all up in his car and take us to another church or something like that. But I've always been in church.
Mm-hmm.
And being in church all day doesn't bother me.
Because mm-hmm.
My mother always brought us up to know that that was the Lord's Day and that we didn't have anything, we shouldn't be doing something else on the Lord's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember, excuse me, I said, I watch children nowadays, they use the Lord's name in vain, they use those nasty words, you know, we was not even able to use funk and all those kind of things, and snap our fingers. I snapped my fingers one day, and my father jumped me and said, don't you ever let me see that. Well, it was like, that was like a worldly thing, you know, and, but now they snap their fingers to the gospel music and everything, you know, and it kind of, you know, takes you back to say, where are we really, you know,
right.
But I've always enjoyed the church.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Well, if you weren't in church, was there anything else much to do around here?
Nothing. And we had to work at a very young age. They had a canning house, Elsner's Canning House, and we went over to the bean field and pick beans, excuse me, in the days we were out of school, and then on since all summer. And I told them that, you know, we used to have to slide down the rows and pick them beans. And not only that, then when we peeled tomatoes, I was telling my granddaughter the other day, I said, a great big bucket of tomatoes, and they would throw a 7-cent check, a little check in there. She said, Mama, you peel a big bucket for 7 cents? I said, that's what we peeled them for. And then we thought we had a lot of money, and then at that time, money went a long way. You didn't, everything was reasonable, and so our mothers would maybe give us maybe $2 or $3, and we'd walk all the way to Avenue Grace in order to spend it and walk back, but it was fun. We just laughed and talked and spent our money and come back, but nowadays a dollar doesn't mean nothing.
What kind of stores were in Avenue Grace, do you remember?
Well, they were like Joe Good's store, and the 5 and 10 was there, and but they were like little stores that, they weren't no chain stores. They were little stores that delivered to people, you know, if you call in your order, they bring it to your house, and things like that. I was telling a girl the other day, I went into Mars to get something, I only came here for one thing. I said, they need those stores that you used to get call in, I said, and you wouldn't see all this stuff and pick it up. And she laughed. She said, when was that? I said, they used to have them.
I remember that.
Mm-hmm. I said, you called in, they would deliver to you. Because even right up here in Aldina, they had stores, you know, Bradfield store and all like that. And you just go up and you, sometimes they would deliver to you, you know, if you just call it in. And you didn't pick up all this other stuff. But it's been a joy. I've enjoyed it. Now, I've only been off of Gravel Hill to live maybe for a year. That was, we lived in Habit Bridge right after we got married. And then we moved right back out here because we moved with my grandmother, and then my husband built the first house we had.
What do you think are the biggest changes you've seen?
The biggest changes that I see
around here? Yeah.
I don't think... The biggest changes is that it's no small children. Well, it seems like all the... Well, I guess people have stopped having children, and they've all gotten larger. There are, you know, children that are in middle school. But you don't see too many little children here anymore. There's not hardly any little children. And I said they build the Gravel Hill playground way too late.
Yeah.
Way too late, because we don't have that many children to even go up there and utilize it. So it's utilized really for, like, when they bring soccer games and all like that in.
Yeah. Do you think this community will die out?
Well, I don't know that it's going to die out, because the people are constantly moving in. You know, like if they put the houses up for sale, somebody buys them, and they're constantly moving in. I don't know. I don't know what would happen to it if that rubber bill would come in. I just don't know. But I would hate to have to move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's about what
but
would
that's
have
what
to do.
Have to do.
Yeah.
And they seem like they care less as to it, because I know that right down the road here, across from our old home place, the Irby's had a home and it burned down. And when they wanted to rebuild there, they told them they couldn't rebuild there because of the...
Try again.
Where was that? With the Irby's. With the Irby's. And so they told them that they couldn't build back on their property because of the water table. And said that they couldn't put no sewage line there because it would empty into someplace down in Swan Creek. And it would empty on into the Chesapeake Bay. Huh. So now, if that is going to be a problem, what is the rubber field going to be?
Yeah, is that not going to dump into the same place?
Yes, this is what we're questioning, you know, as to why. But there's a different standard for different people. And so if they don't want you to build, they have all kinds of loopholes. And we see them. And I don't know whether they think we don't. Or what it is, but we went to the same schools.
Right.
You know,
right.
But it's like there are some people that really think that you're dumb.
Yeah.
And so I don't know just what is going to become of Gravel Hill, but I think that the ones that are here will be remaining here if they can, you know, live here. But the only reason why I think it would die would be that.
Mm-hmm. That's a shame, because it's nice to see a community, and that's what this is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's the same. Now, are most of the people that live here the same, or descendants of the same people that have always been here?
Descendants? No. I guess you can hardly say so, because at the end, that they've always lived here, and, you know, they're descendants. And but then those three houses, they came here. And then all that new, and they build over on the other side, are new people. And then just down in that lane is like two black families, the Scotts and Stansburgs. They've been here for a long time. And then someone bought Miss Hatton Morgan's old house, but I understand that the person is in jail or something, so it's just grown up. You can hardly see the house. But that's really the only old house that's standing on the road. And then where the man that sold the gravel as a new home there, well, that was, you know, those are new people. And even on this side, and as you come on up, they're all new. The house that is right there that Mr. Rob Presbury lived in, they tore the old house down and built a new one. So it's like all of them are new homes.
Mm-hmm. I remember, I guess it was last year when they were threatening to burn the churches and you were getting the hate mail.
Mm-hmm.
Has this community had a lot of that over the years?
No, they've had never. That was the first time that Well, I don't think they threatened to burn it. They just threw that hate mail all in the yard.
So it wasn't at the same time when they were burning all the trees?
It was during the time, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, so it was like they just threw, that was the first time I've ever known that it happened. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know whether it was just a one time thing. They just happened to see that church and it was just open.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
But we've never had no problem.
Well, that's good. Mm-hmm. That's good. Mm-hmm. But you don't think that the problem is over yet?
No, I don't think the problem's over yet. No, I really don't. I really don't.
Yeah.
I said it's just going to take much prayer and concernment and just kind of watching, because they're underhanded and money really costs. Money just...
You think that's what you really learned from the whole Gravel Hill fight?
Well, I've learned that, you know, they've been slowed down, I think, because of who we are and who we believe in. Excuse me. But, and I just don't think that the Lord is going to allow it. That's my special belief. I just don't believe that He's going to allow them to come in and destroy a community.
Uh-huh. Well, it would be nice if you could teach all of us how you have so much faith.
Well, I just have... well, one thing, getting through a whole lot of different situations, I think, has increased my faith, you know, to believe that. And then I've seen so many things, you know, things that I've asked for, and they come to pass, and whatnot. I know He doesn't give me everything that I ask for, and I'm not supposed to get everything, but I just have the faith to believe that He does that.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. It keeps you going.
It does. It keeps you going. Yeah.
Well, why don't you tell me about all the things you do for your church? Because I know there's a lot.
Oh, well, and I tell them, I said, I don't know why you all don't get tired of hearing my name. Because, I'm the Sunday school superintendent, and I've been that for years. And I keep telling them, you know, we need some young people to come in. And their excuse is that they don't want to be burned out and that they don't have time. And you're doing such a good job. And then I just one night I said, I'm not going to be in the gospel choir. I'm coming out. And they were so surprised. And then one day they said, we need you. Come up and stand on the gospel. I said, I'll stand here, but I'm not coming back. So sometimes I just have to, you know, give up things. And I've always had, you know, to lead the choirs. And when now that somebody else is in doing it, it just is such a good feeling. And I'm the president of the Missionary Society, and I'm also the president of the Area Missionary Society. And I told them, I said, you all see, you all have me holding down two things in the missionary, where once you take one, but they don't take it. And then, you know, I'm the president of the Class Leaders Guild, and I had a class at one time, but then I gave it to another fellow, so he's doing very well with it. And I'm the church clerk. I'm the secretary of the meetings, you know. And so it's a lot. And I said, I'm dropping off occasionally, you know.
Uh-huh.
But I hate to drop anything, because I know when I drop it, it goes on entertaining. So I just try to hold her arms up.
Well, that's why I'm sure she appreciates it.
Who was your, do you remember the first preacher that you had over here? The first preacher that I had that I remember is a man called Reverend Holder. And he was a tall man. And I can remember him. And then we had lots after that, you know. But I don't remember all those names. When I see all them other names, I don't remember them.
Do you have one that influenced you more than another?
I don't know. Reverend Tan has been my biggest, you know,
baby. She was the first woman?
She was first woman. And then... my husband and I, we didn't get along with Reverend Mosley too well, and we wouldn't leave our church, but we would go from church to church and come back, and then we'd go from church until he left.
Uh-huh.
And this is what I try to tell everybody. It's not their church, it's your church.
That's
and
true.
If you are having a little problem with them, just visit around and then and don't, you know, be squabbling and arguing, and then just come back. And I say, eventually he's going. And so then, Reverend Makel is the one that married us. And then we had Reverend Simpson.
Did you get married at this church here?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that day?
Yes, I remember that day. I remember I wore a blue dress, and I don't know, I remember it was just a straight blue dress. But I went to my sister, I said, but I don't remember no bridesmaids, I don't remember nothing else. And I said, I remember Clarence Hopkins being Herman's best man, but I don't know about no ushers or nothing. So my sister said, well, I was one of your bridesmaids. Two of my sisters said, well, we were your bridesmaids, and somebody, I don't remember that. Isn't that something? How some things will just block right out of your mind.
Uh-huh.
But it was nice. Now, I can remember that my grandmother wouldn't let me see Herman that day. She made me stay upstairs at her house. And I said, well, why do I have to? I said, I've been seeing him. You know, she said, but you won't see him today. And I didn't see him until he was standing at the altar.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And that was special.
So I don't know whether that was a way of, why we stayed together so long or what. But she didn't allow me to see him.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, now tell me about your kids.
Oh, well.
And your grandchildren.
Well, we have three children. Two girls and a boy, and of course, the oldest girl is Barbie. She was named after a record. My husband liked a record. It was called Oh My Barbara Lee at that time. And he just sang that all the time. So he said, let's name her Barbara Lee. And that'd give her Barbara, and then that'd give her Lenore after his aunt. And I said, oh, okay. So we named her Barbara Lee. But in her older years, she said she didn't like Barbara Lee, so she changed her name to Bobby, and so she is now officially Bobby. And so then my son is Herman Jr. He's in the middle, and when he of course went to Vietnam during that Vietnam, and I went down to the airport, and I could have gotten right on the airplane and went on. That was a hard time at the time, but because he's so loving. He's always been so loving. And not saying the girls are not, but you know, if someone comes and gives you a big hug or all like that, that means so much.
Yeah, it does.
And so then, of course, Patty is the youngest one, and she lives in Newark, Delaware. And so I went to Atlanta 2 months out of this year. And so when my son and his wife were here a couple weeks ago, she spent 2 nights down here. So they said, how come you're spending nights down here? You haven't spent with Mama before. And so she says, I'm protecting my inheritance. So, but she and I, we're going to drive to Atlanta for Thanksgiving.
Oh, that'll be fine.
She said, I'm not going to drive her down, I'm going to drive her back.
That'll be fine.
But it's a good feeling when you can go and all your children want you.
Yeah, it really is.
Uh-huh, yes. Really, I could go live with any one of them.
Yeah.
But I told my husband, stick it out here by myself for a while.
Uh-huh.
And they come and go, you know.
Uh-huh. And how many grandchildren?
I have 5 grandchildren.
Uh-huh.
I have 2 grandsons and 3 granddaughters.
Yeah, am I right?
Yeah, Taryn. Yeah, Taryn Shannon. Who's the other?
Oh, you're confused.
No, I've got 3 grandsons and 2 granddaughters. Yes, 3 grandsons, and the oldest grandson does not allow me to forget that he's number one. And I don't know how I did that, but I have 3 grandsons, and I have 1 great-grand. My oldest grandson has a little boy.
Oh, that's really special.
Yeah, he's like 4. Yeah, he's 4, so I go get him. He wants to come to Mom Hayes' house right now. But we are a very close-knit family.
That's wonderful. Do you have many times when you can all get together?
Yes, we usually all get together like at Christmas or Thanksgiving, so that we're just not together at a funeral. Yeah, so we're all going to be together Thanksgiving, other than the great-grand.
Uh-huh.
They want him for their Thanksgiving, so I thought it was no more than right. We had
right,
him
to share.
Yeah.
Sure.
So we'll all be together.
That's good.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Is that the best joy in your life?
Oh, the best joy in my life? Well, I guess with my children. Raising my children and seeing them become all Christian. That is the best joy. And when they all come, you know, they're right at the church, you know, with me. That is the best joy. Because yeah. There's so many mothers. And then all of my brothers and my sisters are in church. And one night, I guess that I just went off because all my brothers were there. I have one brother that was killed, but my other brothers, now I have one that just died 2 years ago. But and then my youngest brother has moved here now from California, which makes it so much nicer. And so all four of them were together at a program in Port Deposit. So he taped it, videoed it for me so I could see all four of them together. Those are the joys of my life, to see my family come up in the Christian way.
Right. Mm-hmm. What do you think your parents would say if they could see all that?
Oh, I don't know. I just don't know, because my mother was my closest friend, and we went to missionary together and everything, and then when she passed at an early age. She was only 66.
Oh, dear God.
But now my father, he died in 78. And my father was a loving man, but he was a man that most men don't know how to tell the children they love you. And it was like, when on his dying bed, he accepted the Lord Jesus Christ. He would go out and sing with they had a silver tone quartet, and he would go out and sing at all the churches. He was a basser, and he would sing and all, but he had said that he would never join church until he lived right, and he was still hitting the bottle. And I told him, I said, Daddy, I said, there's a whole lot of people hit the bottle that belong to church, and you don't get right until you come in the church. But I couldn't get him to see that, you know, and so he joined, he gave his life to Christ on his death, when he was getting ready to leave there. And then he had my brother to take down messages to all of his children to tell them how much he loved them. And he read that at the funeral. It was really something special. It was really something special. And then we had a family get together. Oh, no, we had they surprised my husband out with a banquet. And my sister read that same thing at the banquet. And people said they'd never heard nothing like that.
Oh, my. Mm-hmm. Oh, it sent shivers down my spine just thinking about it.
Yes. And he was in, he was at home, and we were getting ready. He was in the hospital. And we were to put him in Brother Nursing Home that next day. And they called me that night and said he passed. Because he did not want to go. He did not want to go. So if I'm not wanting to go, the doctor can help me.
Wow. That's a wonderful story.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. And I said, I was saddened to see Brevin close, you know, because we've been there at the Guild for quite a while.
Yeah.
But I said, you know, there comes a time that you have to move on. And Mr. Brest has had to move on. So I said, Brevin is one of those things.
Yeah. Were the nursing homes ever segregated? Was Brevin segregated at any point?
I don't really know.
Maybe it opened later.
It probably might have been segregated when it was onset. You know, I don't know. And then when the segregation, you know, they might have. I just don't really know.
Yeah.
So I don't. I don't know. Because I don't imagine where. I can't imagine where the black people went. Whether they just stayed home or what.
Stayed with the family.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I just don't know. Because the hospital was segregated, wasn't it?
Yeah, the hospital. I remember that. I remember how we had to go in that little back door now where the emergency is, just about, and you go in the back there. And my father was in the segregated. We were all here. Yeah, I've seen that. Mm-hmm.
That's just so hard to even imagine.
Imagine.
Mm-hmm. But it wasn't that long ago.
It wasn't that long ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there were African American doctors.
Oh, yes. Yes. Dr. Cowan at that time was the black doctor in Habitburg, and he could come in to see the patients in the back there. Yeah. Because most times, we had Dr. Woolbrook. I don't know if you remember him or not, but he was a white doctor, but, you know, he tended a lot of the patients, a lot of the black patients. But, yeah, I remember when
I know a lot of people say, well, we should put that behind us, but if you put it behind you, don't think about it, then you don't learn a lesson from it.
Yeah, and this is why I can't really watch, I have the whole thing of Roots, and I've watched, I think, about maybe 7 tapes, and that when it goes so far, it just goes off to me, so I just don't, I said, one of these days I'll sit and watch it, you know, but it's hard to believe, to think that. And then it happens now in some places.
Well, it's still happening.
It's still happening. It hasn't stopped happening. And then to see, just the other day, the mayor the black mayor in California was giving a speech and how they throw them pies in his face and all that. So it hasn't gone away.
Yeah. Well, it's the man that they tied behind the car. And
yes, and dragged. It hasn't gone away. It's still here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know when or how that's going to go away. Do you?
I don't know either, because and then you have these cults that are just rising now, you know, the skinheads and these different groups that are rising.
It's almost getting worse than it was.
So it's almost getting worse. And the Bible states that.
Does it really?
Yes, it states that there's going to be times that we cannot stand. So we can stand this. We can, you know, kind of overlook this and see it about this. But this Bible states that there's going to be times we're not going to be able to comprehend what's going to happen.
Scary.
It's scary. It's scary. But that's the revelation that says that. That's going to come that time that, you know, we're not going to be able. And that's when I told him I want to be caught up.
I'll be done by then.
Yeah, I'll be done. I'll be caught up. And I said, I will not be here. And I know they keep saying, you'll keep saying it's the end of time. I said, but our time is not God's time.
No.
And I said, where are we thinking in terms of 1 year? You know, he's thinking in terms of thousands of years.
Right. Yeah, our time on this earth is awful short.
Yes. It's always, you know, right now. Everything's right
I just saw something that said, you know, in 100, don't worry about the little things, because in 100 years it'll be all new people.
And that's right. That's so true.
And it is true.
So true.
It is true.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Mm-hmm. Oh, well. Well, you've just given us a lot to think about.
Yeah.
I'm sure glad you did this.
Well, thank you.
Sure glad you did this.
Thank you.
You and your husband really are an asset to our community.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I try to do what I can do.
It's like the food nutrition committee, you know, I'm on that. And Mr. Mensah, you know Mr. Mensah?
Uh-huh.
Okay, he's been a good president, and he's given it up. He said because he don't have time for his wife. And, you know, I understand that you can be so bogged down with some things that you don't have time for your family or no one else. And so I'm the vice president of that. And when I took it, I told him, I said, I will not be your president. So we have a meeting over here in my church Wednesday. So one of the girls, we went to a luncheon Saturday night. She says, Miss Hay, aren't you going to accept the presidency? We don't have nobody else. I said, no. I keep telling you. I said, I have to hold to, I hate to say no. I've hated to say it down through the years. And I said, this is why I get caught up in so many things. So I said, but I'm going to have to say no. I said, so then one of the girls suggested, Mary Barnhart suggested that maybe what we do is everybody take it. Lead a month at a time. And I said, that's the way we can do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I said, just everybody take a month at a time and lead the, you know, program.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't like to do something unless I'm going to do a good job.
That's right. And I told him, I said, because I don't know when I'm going to pick up and go to Atlanta, and I said, I'll be going for a couple months or something like that, y'all, or go to Charlotte or something. And I said, I don't want to be saying I'm the president and I'll be a good president.
Right.
So I said, whereas if you just everybody take it a month at a time, because it's a good program.
Yeah. But some people want to be president just to say they're president, you know.
Well, but that's very few.
Yeah.
There's very few of them that does that. And most of them don't want. They think it's such a big job, and it's not.
Yeah.
You know, because your people is what helps to make the job.
And it's fun.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think we're going to lose volunteers. I don't see young people coming forth. And
No.
They're too caught up in living, or something. I don't know what they're caught up in. Working, or buying things.
Working, or watching that TV.
Yeah.
That's a lot of it.
Yeah.
Watching stories, and getting videos, and all that kind of stuff.
It's easier.
Oh, that's true.
But you miss a lot by not volunteering.
You do.
Yeah, and I don't know how you teach people that.
They want us to open up a deal at Lauren.
Uh-huh.
So they asked Patty Ford if she would lead. So Patty said, will you work with me? I said, you let me think about it.
So I'm still thinking.
You're still thinking.
Oh, that would be a good idea, though.
Yeah, it would be nice if they had a deal. We had quite a bit of money left from Brevin Gill.
Uh-huh.
And so they wanted to disperse it between the different nursing homes. So Patty and I had Lauren, and we went down and we asked the activity director just what they needed. And she said, oh, we need some entertainment centers. And so, you know, we went to BJ's and got a beautiful Oakley to entertainment center. And by being a corner one, she said she couldn't use but one corner one. So then we went to Montgomery Ward and got a beautiful Cherry one. And he spent all $400 wisely, and they got something very worthwhile.
That's good.
And so it makes us feel good to know that part of Brevin is down at
Moses. Did they send most of the people from, where did they send most of the people from
they
Brevin?
They sent them different places. Some went to Citizen, some went to Lawrence, some went to Elton, and some went to the place of Forest Hill.
That had to be hard if they were used to that place
and
those people.
So they were saying that, well, maybe just give them money to the different ones we sent, and that's what we did.
Uh-huh.
It was like seven.
Uh-huh.
So we divided $400 to each one.
Mm-hmm. It's a shame to see something like that spend there forever.
Forever, yeah.
Yeah.
But and then I guess it was time, you know, because they didn't have an elevator, and it was the steps and three floors, and maybe, you know, we never knew. Something might have been getting ready to happen.
Well, that's true. Mm-hmm. Had there ever been a fire or something, it would have been awful.
It would have been blessed.
It really could have been awful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They had fart scoops, you know.
Yeah, but can you imagine?
Can you imagine trying to get them?
Yeah.
So it's been blessed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Mr. Freshman has got a feeling. You know, you get feelings.
Yeah, you know, when it's time to move on.
And he had that bypass, you know.
Right.
But he looked good, but he just said he was tired.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, I thank you. I really do thank you for your time. It's been fun.
I told one of my members yesterday, I said, maybe I should listen to them tapes of hers and see what she's going to ask.
I don't usually ask anybody anything. They just start talking.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And most people say, well, I've never done anything important. I don't have anything to say. And I said, everybody has a story.
Oh, yeah, everybody has a story.
And everybody's is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't think so. You know, I just live my life and go
out. That's like I told everybody. I said, everyone has a testimony. Everybody has a testimony. I said, if you haven't been tested, then you don't have a testimony.
That's true.
Everybody has had a test of some kind. It wasn't no more than falling out of a tree.
Absolutely.
I said, and you were hanging there. How about that little boy? Oh, they said, we don't know what he's going to get when he gets home.
Oh, my gosh. I kept thinking about the poor mother, thinking, oh, she must have been scared to death.
Oh, no, to be that high in the tree.
And I said, well, how did he stay up there and not fall out of it? He must have just hung on.
He hung on a tree then. He was daring. He just said, probably daring. There's someone daring him to do that, and he just went on up there.
Oh, my. Well, my.